vote in most every election? Many public radio listeners do. You're known to be politically involved and engaged. But would you favor a law that would force you and everybody else to vote? We will talk about mandatory voting this hour with a guest who says it's a good idea. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, December the 7th. And we welcome your thoughts and questions about mandatory voting. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Bill Galston, Senior Fellow in Governance Studies at the Brookings Institution. He's a former policy advisor to President Clinton and an expert on domestic policy, political campaigns, and elections. And he penned an op-ed piece that appeared recently last month in the New York Times on mandatory voting. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks very much for joining us. So why should we even consider mandating people to vote?
Well, there are a number of different reasons. The first has to do with citizenship. I think we have to ask ourselves, are there any things that we're required to do simply because we're citizens of our country? There used to be quite a few since the abolition of the draft. Many fewer, but for example, we are, in most jurisdictions, required to show up for jury duty when asked. And the question is why not voting? Now, let me give you the arguments in favor. Right now, as most Americans are all too aware, we have a highly polarized political system. And part of that has to do with the nature of leadership and our institutions in Washington, but a big part of it has to do with who actually shows up to participate in elections. By international standards, we have very low turnouts, and our turnouts tend to be dominated by the most passionate partisans on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
That's especially true in our primaries, but it's also true in the general election. And that generates pressure in favor of candidates who are prepared to draw pretty bright lines against the other party, and it militates against people who are less clear in their views, more open to persuasion from both sides. And a lot of Americans think that our politics would be a lot better if the voices of people in that latter category were a lot louder in our political system. But I think experience shows that those voices are not going to be louder unless we provide some additional incentives or even requirements for them to participate. Now, lest you think that I'm just making this whole thing up, I've modeled my idea on a system that was adopted in Australia more than 75 years ago.
Yeah, tell us how it works in Australia.
Well, sure. And let me tell you the story. In the second decade of the 20th century and at the beginning of the 1920s, Australian leaders got alarmed because voting participation had declined below 60%. That doesn't ring any alarm bells in this country,
yes.
But in Australia it did. It went down to 59% in the early 1920s in national elections. And so the Australian Parliament passed a bill making it a requirement for everybody to show up at the polling booths. Not necessarily, they were not forced to cast ballots against their wills, but, you know, as a civic matter, they had to show up at the polling booths. And if they didn't, they would be offered a chance to explain why not, and there were categories of exemptions. If you're out of the country, you can't show up. If you're ill or if a member of your family is ill, if you're required to travel too great a distance, in Australia back then especially, many people had to travel very great distances, then you were exempt, but otherwise you were required. In the very first election after the Australians instituted this system, backed by a fine equivalent then and now to a traffic ticket,
mm-hmm.
Participation rose from 59% to 91%.
Wow.
And in the ensuing couple of elections, it rose to about 95%. And it's been in the vicinity of 95% ever since. And I'm not saying that it created a new Jerusalem in Australia, but it had a real effect on the tone of Australian politics. Now, if Australia were the only country in the world that did anything of the sort, then you might say, so what? Well, a couple of things to that. First of all, there are 30 democracies around the world that use some form of mandatory voting, including a number of European countries, more than half the nations of Latin America. And in the second place, I've actually spent a fair amount of time in Australia. Not only is it an English-speaking country, but of all the English-speaking countries, it is the one most like us culturally. If people know Australians, you know they're individualists, they're free spirits. They don't really like to be told what to do. But they complied willingly with this, and I've talked to a number of Australians who said that this has now become part of the civic consciousness. As a result of the law, generations of Australians have internalized the idea that when you have an election, it's your responsibility to show up and participate.
What about, though, the American ideal of all of our freedoms and that we have, you know, the choice to show up at the polls or not?
Well, that of course is the counter argument, but that's why I led off with the threshold question.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything about citizenship that isn't simply a matter of choice? And I think almost everybody, there are sure some libertarians who will take the other side of the case, but almost everybody would acknowledge, yes, we certainly, as a matter of citizenship, have the duty to obey the law. That's not a choice.
Right.
If you're subject to the jurisdictions of the laws of the United States, you are required to obey them. And as I said before, there are certain aspects of citizenship that are not voluntary. In virtually every jurisdiction, if you receive a summons for jury duty, you don't choose whether or not to comply. As a citizen, you understand that the right of trial by a jury of your peers requires peers willing to show up to form part of the jury. And if you're not willing to do that, then the whole system collapses. Well, I would make a similar argument, namely that we're going to have a hard time sustaining our democracy if people regard the most fundamental act of citizenship, that is making your voice heard about the direction of the country, as purely optional. Now, does this mean that you actually have to cast a ballot against your will? No. You're free to show up and cast a blank ballot if that's your preference. And by the way, when the Australian law was first passed, a lot of people were convinced that hordes of Australians resentful of the law would show up and do just that. They'd cast blank ballots or they'd spoil their ballots or vote at random. Guess what? No more than 2-3% of Australians have ever chosen to protest against the system by spoiling their ballots in that way.
What about the fear, though, that people who aren't following the issues are maybe just watching TV ads, not really caring, not really researching the candidates, are just casting an uneducated vote?
There's never been either a law or a norm against uneducated voting in the United States, and we're hardly free of it now.
Right, but we would be forcing everybody to make that vote.
I understand, but let me go on to make the positive point now. At least the Australians that I've talked to say, you know what, if you know that you're going to have to vote when the election day comes, you have more of an incentive to get more information about what you're going to be required to do. So it can work mm-hmm. the other way around. If you know in advance that you're not going to vote, then why acquire information? But if you know that you have to vote, then you have more of an incentive to cast a more informed ballot.
We are talking about mandatory voting with Bill Galston. He's a senior fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution, and he's making a case for mandatory voting in this country. He's telling us why it would create a less polarized, more effective political system. And we wonder what you think and what your reaction is to this idea. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can vote, so to speak. You can also send an email to talk@WPR.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Do you think that mandatory voting would be a good or bad for our country, and why? Checking the weather forecast for today, it's going to be mostly cloudy with a slight chance of light snow this morning near Lake Superior. Highs today will be in the 20s. Tonight, cloudy with a slight chance of snow, again in the northwest, lows in the teens. And then tomorrow, partly cloudy, a slight chance of light snow, again near Lake Superior and also along the Illinois border. Highs tomorrow, mid-teens to low 30s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up a little bit later this morning, we are in for a treat. We will talk about holiday baking with a chef from America's Test Kitchen. We'll talk about favorite Christmas cookies and holiday treats. And we'll also talk about the best cookbooks of the year with the cookbook reviewer from NPR. That's in our 8 o'clock hour later this morning. I'm looking forward to that. Looking forward to hearing what you have to say about our topic this hour, mandatory voting. Our guest says jury duty is obligatory. Voting should be too. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions on this. Bill Galston wrote a piece in favor of mandatory voting that appeared last month in the New York Times. Susan on Facebook writes, "It's ironic that as you discuss mandatory voting, we hear about seniors and others in Wisconsin having trouble meeting the new voter ID requirements in Wisconsin." And I don't know, Bill Galston, if you heard that news report that was on just before we started the program. Talk about, if you could, if you can talk about voter ID and the effort to try to stop people who aren't supposed to vote from voting and your concept or your idea of mandatory voting.
Well, they clearly pull in opposite directions. I'm going to get into a lot of trouble for what I'm about to say, but I think voter ID laws are a cure in search of a disease. I know of very little evidence that there is widespread voter fraud anywhere in the United States. And it seems to me that our laws ought to be configured to maximize political participation, not minimize it. And that's why, even setting aside the issue of mandatory voting, I'm in favor of provisions that would make it easier to vote, particularly for people who are less firmly attached to the political system. Let me give you an example. I believe in a system called same-day registration, where you can show up on election day to register and vote at the same time. And there are ways of making sure that that doesn't lead to fraud. Because if you show up to register, then you have to verify your residence and a few other things. And if people are really worried about that, then the votes that are cast following same day registration could be put into some sort of provisional category and checked immediately after the election. I think that we ought to do everything possible to make it easier for young people and the elderly and others who are more distant from the political system for one reason or another to get into it and make their voices heard. If we want to strengthen our democracy, then we're going to have to make sure that as many voices as possible are part of the discussion.
Well, we'll move up to some callers, and we have many of them. So let's go to Eric in Green Bay first. Hello, Eric.
Hi.
Hi.
How do you enforce that mandatory voting?
How do you enforce it, Bill Galston?
Well, as I said in my opening remarks, in Australia, which is what I'm modeling my proposal on, if you don't vote and if you don't have a valid excuse, you pay the equivalent of a traffic ticket fine. It's in the nature of $50. And what I find astonishing is that a fine that won't change anybody's life has such a big effect on behavior.
Yeah. Would someone goes through the voter rolls to see who has an excuse and who voted and then...
Well, there's obviously a computerized system that makes that very easy.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that mandatory voting would require in the United States is an upgrading of our antiquated voter information procedures. It's ridiculous. If you look at other democracies around the world, including democracies like India, which are much bigger in population than the United States, much poorer, much more diverse, the Indians managed to carry off national elections in a country that people thought was going to fall apart 5 years after independence, and to do it much more smoothly than we do. We may think of ourselves as a world leader in some respects, but in voting technology, we're behind other advanced democracies. And so my proposal, in addition to its other effects, would create incentives for state and local governments to raise their game.
Mm-hmm. Thanks to Eric for the call. Ruben in Watertown is with us now. Hello, Ruben.
Good morning, Joy. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for calling. Do you have a question or thought on this?
Certainly. First, I would say that I would describe myself as a libertarian, and generally I would agree with your guest that mandatory voting would be a solution to some of these problems. The issue that I see with it is simply the one of implementation. I think that, as your guest said, the voter registration system in our nation is woefully out of date. But if we start a process by which we are going to require everybody to vote, we have to have everybody on a list. We have to have everybody somehow accountable. And in a nation where we can't even come within a suitable margin of error with our census, I just wonder how exactly it is that we're going to get an adequate list of all these eligible voters and be able to enforce it. Many of the people that fall through the cracks in a census, some would say, are the same folks that are disenfranchised voters. And in many ways, I don't know that this is necessarily going to get that population out. The other issue is, I think the voter ID, not specific to the state of Wisconsin, but on a national level, is certainly going to become an issue if we implement a nationalized mandatory voting system.
Mm-hmm. Bill Galston?
Well, I think the questions of implementation are significant. I agree with the caller. But I would distinguish between the problems with the census and the issue of voting rolls for a very simple reason. The U.S. Census is a national function, according to the Constitution. And so the Census Bureau has to cast a very, very wide net over over an entire continent. By our Constitution and also in accordance with tradition, voting is much more of a state and local function. And so states and localities are responsible not for a vast nation beyond their borders, but only for their own populations. That makes it a more manageable problem, state by state, county by county, and even precinct by precinct. I do think that states would have to do more to make sure that their rolls were as complete as possible. The caller is absolutely right. Some people are going to fall through the cracks. This is not a council of perfection, but we're talking about a country where only about 35% of the people show up to vote in midterm elections. And only about 60% of the people show up to vote in national elections, presidential elections, every 4 years. We have a lot of room for improvement. We're nowhere near the ceiling. We are now where the Australians were in the early 1920s, and they got a 30-point boost before they started seriously implementing the law passed round one. So I think that without seeking perfection, we can make a whole lot of progress if we set our minds to it.
Yeah, is this just for a presidential election or a federal election? What about, you know, local or state elections?
Well, let's, you know, now let's get to the real problem of implementation. This could not be done on a national basis, or at least we'd have a big constitutional fight about the meaning of provisions that haven't been litigated in a long time. And so my proposal, as I spelled it out in my New York Times piece, is to find half a dozen states that would be willing to take the first step, show the way for the country. And it actually did occur to me, although I didn't name any states, that states in the upper Midwest with traditions of civic engagement, states like Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
might conceivably be willing to step forward and show the way for the rest of the country. I don't think it's an accident, by the way, that I'm talking to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Yeah.
Of all of the public radio in the country, you were the first to pick up on this idea and call me for an interview. And that says something, I think, about your civic traditions.
Yeah, well, and I need to jump in, and we will talk more about civic traditions and this idea to implement mandatory voting in this country after we check the latest news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio.
Vote for me, yeah. Vote for me, yeah. If you want to have prosperity, vote for me and you'll see, I'm going to save the whole country.
We are talking with a guest who says we would be better off, we would be less polarized and more effective politically if we had a mandatory voting system on the books. Should voting be mandatory? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Wednesday, December the 7th. And our guest this hour is making the case for mandatory voting. And just before news, he mentioned that maybe Wisconsin would be a good pilot state to see if this system would work. Do you think that's a good idea? Should Wisconsin be a pilot state for a mandatory voting system? Bill Galston is Senior Fellow in Governance Studies at the Brookings Institution, a former policy advisor to President Clinton, and an expert on domestic policy, political campaigns, and elections. He wrote a piece, an op-ed piece, that appeared last month in the New York Times, making the case for mandatory voting, basing his plan on the mandatory voting system that is in place and is apparently working well in Australia. We have so many callers. Let me go back to the phones. Teresa in Janesville is with us now. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I think it's actually a pretty good idea for a couple of reasons. I worked with a group of disabled adults, and they had family members telling them they weren't allowed to vote, and some of them were mentally disabled. And we checked it out, and as long as they could basically understand an argument and say yes or no, they were allowed to vote. That you don't have to have perfect mental skill. But the other thing is, if we're going to do that, if it's going to be mandatory voting, then you've got to get rid of the rule, especially in the primaries, that says you have to vote one, either Democratic or Republican, because I cannot remember the last time that I liked everyone on a ticket. I don't know if it's ever happened, because I really don't, if I had to declare I'm a Democrat, but I'm really not, because I think there's so many people in each party that really shouldn't be in public service, and there are a lot of people who should be. So to go, I can't vote a party line. And that's my biggest problem with it. You've got to pick one or the other. If you're going to demand that people vote, you can't demand that they vote a particular way.
Mm-hmm. So that's certainly the case in primaries, not the general. But Bill Galston, what about that?
Well, that's a serious practical problem, and there is tension between mandatory voting on the one hand and what are called closed or party-only primaries on the other. For various reasons, I'm in favor of a much more open primary system, and the state of California right now is engaged in what will turn out to be, I think, a momentous experiment, opening up their system beyond party only. But it's not the intention of my proposal to override the rules that state parties create. And if they say that only Democrats or only Republicans are allowed to participate, then it would not be my intention in implementing this to require people who can't in good conscience register as either Democrats or Republicans to participate. That would be crazy.
Yeah. And in Wisconsin, you don't have to declare that you're in a party. You get a ballot, but you only can vote in if there are several Democrats running for an office. You have to stick in voting for Democrats. You can't be voting in both primaries and narrowing the field in both primaries.
I see. So. Yeah. Well, actually, that I have to say that that's not unreasonable, although the state of California has gone beyond that, and they have instituted, if I understand it correctly, a new primary system in which all candidates of both parties or no party are running in the same primary, and then the top two finishers square off against one another.
Yeah, interesting.
Election.
Mm-hmm. Teresa, thank you so much for the call. Alan in Lancaster is with us now. Hello, Alan.
Hi, Joy. How are you doing?
Very good. Are you for this or not?
Well, being a veteran and having done a couple tours across seas and fighting for the freedoms that we as Americans hold most precious, one of the fundamental ones being the right to or not to vote and who we choose to vote for, I just wonder what, when you start stripping rights and freedoms away from us, where do you draw the line? And not only that, but it just seems like it's taking away the whole democratic process by not everyone wants to vote all the time. Thank you very much. I'll take my answer offline.
Alan, before you go, though, what about you go? You don't have to vote for someone. You can cast a blank ballot if you want to.
Where I stand on that is maybe somebody doesn't even want to be part of the process, and if they don't, that's a right that me and millions of Americans have fought for.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not behind somebody. Why be forced to waste your time to even go down to the ballot?
Mm-hmm. Bill Galston?
Well, I have lots of reactions. First of all, I'm one veteran talking to another. I was drafted into the Marines at the height of the Vietnam era conflict. We had a draft at that point rather than an all-volunteer armed forces, and we could have a very interesting discussion about the civic consequences of moving from a system where the sons and now also the daughters of educated, professional, wealthy people are subject to the same civic requirements as everybody else. I'm not convinced, as a matter of democracy and citizenship, that the shift from the draft to which I was subjected to an all-volunteer forces has necessarily been all for the better. But let's just stick to the civic process. I'm not sure your caller would want to make the argument that jury duty should simply be optional, a matter of choice. And here's why. We have a right to trial by jury of our peers. But that right entails a responsibility on the citizenry as a whole to show up to form the jury pool and to participate in juries when called, because otherwise the system collapses. And so if you ask me, where do I draw the line? Well, wherever I draw the line, jury duty as a requirement of citizenship is on the right side of the line, not the wrong side of the line. And that raises the question, well, where does voting belong? Is it like jury duty, or is it like going out to the restaurant? And I say it's more like jury duty.
Let's take another call from Ken in Clintonville. Hello, Ken.
Hi. I think that that mandatory voting is a bad idea without campaign finance reform. Otherwise, the candidate with the most money is going to get the most votes.
Campaign finance reform required with this, Bill Galston?
Well, actually, first of all, I'm sure the caller is not taking the position that in our current system, money doesn't have a big influence. So the question is whether my proposal would increase the influence of money or decrease the influence of money. And I say it would decrease the influence of money because right now, campaigns with a lot of money enjoy a huge edge in being able to create organizations to reach out and find out who their voters are, get them to the polls, etc. And that is one of the most expensive functions in any campaign. If people are required to show up and vote, and 90 or 95% of them do as a matter of law, then campaigns with less money can have a greater expectation that their supporters are going to show up and vote. And they can probably make do with less money overall. So I actually think that my proposal would diminish the effect of money in politics, not increase it.
Yeah, well, along those same lines, I think Gaia agrees with Ken. On Facebook, she writes, if money were taken out of the system and the propaganda wheel could be shut down, letting the actual truth be told, I think mandatory voting would be a marvelous idea. So people are just afraid of seeing even more ads. But you're saying that people would be researching the issues more than they currently are.
Look, we'll never know until we try, which is why a great American once described the states as the laboratories of democracy. So let's do an experiment. Let's take Wisconsin and five other states from around the country and say, we're going to lead the way, and we're going to show whether or not this is a good idea. If it doesn't work, no one should follow us, and we should stop. If it does work, the rest of the country should join forces with us.
Yeah, and how would we determine, again, that it worked?
Well, first of all, you'd look at the effects on actual voter participation. As I said before, in the first election after the Australians went in this direction, participation rose from 59% to 91%. That was a pretty good result.
Very good.
And this was done, of course, in a pre-computerized age, and they didn't have all of the technologies for implementing this sort of system that we do today. Secondly, how many people are so opposed to the system that they rebel against it in various ways? As you recall, in Australia, the fear as this was being implemented was that lots and lots of citizens would resent so much being summoned to the polls the way they're summoned for jury duty that they'd spoil their ballots or otherwise try to invalidate the process. And decades of actual experience have shown that those non-compliant voters, those resistors, amount to 2 to 3% of the total, not really enough to affect much of anything. The third thing we'd look at, and a number of callers have raised this issue, is problems of implementation. Right? Does it turn out to be so cumbersome in practice, so flawed in practice, that we would have to chalk it up as being one of those ideas that sounds a lot better or looks a lot better on paper than it is in reality? I could go on, but those are some of the tests that we can do.
Yeah. We will go on after we take a short pause, talking with Bill Galston, Senior Fellow in Governance Studies at the Brookings Institution, about his plan, his idea on implementing a mandatory voting system in this country. He says, let's start with a few states, maybe Wisconsin. What do you think? Should voting be mandatory? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Quick check of the weather. Cloudy today, a slight chance of light snow this morning near Lake Superior. Highs statewide will be in the 20s. This is the Ideas Network. Stay tuned for our big question debate coming up after 7 o'clock this morning. Today's big question has to do with the new rules or the updated rules regulating protesting at the state capitol, in the state capitol building. The rules would require groups of four or more to get a permit 72 hours ahead of time if they want to protest something, and maybe even put a down payment down on possible cleanup costs and law enforcement costs. They'd be responsible or liable for those costs. So is this an infringement on free speech, as critics contend, or reasonable and needed, as supporters contend? We'll have two guests with different views on the protest rules at the state capitol in our Big Question segment coming up after 7 o'clock. For the rest of this hour, we are talking about whether or not we would be better off if voting were mandatory. Our guest says we would and has been making that case. And our next caller is Barb in Green Bay. Hello, Barb.
Hello.
Hi, what do you think?
Well, initially when I heard that your topic today, I was outraged. I was like, whoa, we can't be forced to vote. But then I remembered that I've always taught my children that if they choose not to exercise their right to vote, then they don't have a right to criticize what the government is doing.
Mm-hmm. A reaction to that?
Well, first of all, I wish that all parents would instruct their children so wisely. I think that's exactly right. And I would go a step farther and say that not adding your voice to the chorus of democracy makes it less likely that people like you, people with your outlook, your experience, your advantages and your problems, are going to have their due weight in the affairs of our democracy. And I don't think that's in anybody's interest. And let me tell you why. Democracy is not just a way of making decisions. It's also a way of pooling information. Voting is a way of sending a signal not only to our leaders but to our fellow citizens. What do we care about? What do we think? And the country is not going to function very well unless we're all sharing information with one another about what our real needs and priorities are. There are lots of different ways of doing that, but elections are a tried and true method. They're not perfect, and you don't always send the message that you want to send, or the message that you send is not always received in the way that you intend to send it. And there are all sorts of ways in which elected representatives either fail to hear the people's voice or choose not to hear it. But if you don't take the first step and make your voice heard, then for sure it's not going to be taken into account. So there are so many different reasons for broad-based participation in the most fundamental act of civic life, namely voting in a democracy, that I don't think an hour is enough even to list them.
Yeah. A caller, Steve in Rosemont, Illinois, called in but had a bad cell phone connection. And he said that he doesn't believe your idea is feasible because he said that he thought the Constitution does not allow this. Do you know if he's right, and would this require a constitutional amendment of some sort?
Well, as I said, we would have a big constitutional argument as to whether the federal government could require it of every state. But if you look at the applicable constitutional provisions, The states are in the first instance empowered to determine mm-hmm. the time, place, and manner of their elections. And I doubt very much that any court, any federal court, would interfere with a state that decided that requiring voting was one of the time, place, and manner requirements. Now, There might be state constitutional provisions to the contrary. I'm not an expert in the constitution of the 50 states, but clearly, if, for example, there is some constitutional provision that would be violated by required voting, then that matter would have to be litigated in the state courts, and that might require a state constitutional amendment someplace. But I don't think, and I've thought about this, that there is a federal constitutional obstacle to a state that wants to move in the direction I'm suggesting.
Next we go to Guy in Green Bay. Hello, Guy. We're almost out of time. What did you want to say?
Well, I just think that mandatory voting would just complete the farce of our democracy here. I think people need access to information. I remember about 3 years ago I took a test online of how I felt about various issues, and I had to pick how I felt about them. And then I submitted my questions, and up came all the candidates, and it showed me which candidates, even ones that I'd never heard of, actually it was Sam Brownback, had the highest number of points in agreement with me, and it gave me, and then there was access to links to things about this person. And when I read it, I became excited. Of course, the next day, the guy dropped out of the race because he didn't have any money and nobody knew about it.
Yeah, so what about mandatory voting, though?
Well, I see it, and my wife was born in Brazil, and they have mandatory voting there. And, of course, it's a farce. Why do you want people who aren't interested, who are ignorant as hell, why do you want to force them to participate? It's going to reduce the country to bread and circuses and politicians promising the most.
Yeah, well, a guy must have missed, our first half hour, Bill Galston, on you think people will not be uneducated. They'll inform themselves like a guy did when he went online to do that program.
Well, once again, we can only speculate about what the results of the experiment in the United States would be. All I know is that in the country that I'm modeling my proposal on, namely Australia, the system of mandatory voting has not only increased participation, but has given individual Australians incentives that they wouldn't otherwise have had to learn a little bit more about the candidates and the issues than they might have otherwise. So I think while I agree with the caller that uninformed political participation is undesirable, I think that my proposal would actually increase the amount of information not only available to citizens, but actually used by citizens in the course of figuring out whom to vote for.
Well, we have less than a minute to go. We're kind of involved with a lot of highly polarized recall politics going on in Wisconsin right now. But in order for Wisconsin to become a pilot state, a state lawmaker would just have to try to introduce this and pass it through the legislature?
That's correct.
Well, maybe they're listening. All right. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Bill Galston, Senior Fellow in Governance Studies at the Brookings Institution, former policy advisor to President Clinton, an expert on domestic policy, political campaigns, and elections. We've included a link on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page and our website to his op-ed piece that appeared last month in the New York Times, telling Americans to vote or else, on mandatory voting. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Amanda Magnus for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.